morning. Welcome to Prime Time. Today is Wednesday, the 16th of September, 2020. Charles is my name, and joining me on the show today is Mr. Chukwuma Okengwa. He is Executive Director at Leeds Network. Good to have you. Good evening.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Charles.
All right, so you're going to be running with me on the new segment of the show today. We're going to be telling you a little later of what we're going to be talking about. It's all about the elections in Edo State. But first, the Nigerian Labour Congress has today issued a 14-day ultimatum to the federal government to review the twin hikes in petrol and electricity tariff or risk facing full industrial action. Following its meeting with the government on Tuesday, the Labour Union held a central working committee only today where it deliberated and came to the decision to issue a 14-day ultimatum which is to expire on the 28th of September. The president of the Nigerian Labour Congress, Comrade Ayuba Waba, while addressing journalists, says, quote, "We have convened because of the twin issues of hikes in fuel and electricity. And the CWC has noted that the two increases, despite the fact that they are ill-termed because of COVID-19 and the economic situation of the country, the CWC has also identified that it has reduced the purchasing power of Nigerians." Welcome development, you think, Mr. Okengwa?
Well, I would say welcome development. However, I would say the Nigeria Labour Congress need to actually review the issues, the major issues behind this hike. First, let me identify that this hike does not in any way suggest removal of a fuel subsidy from the intelligence gathering. However, the Nigeria government is under compulsion by IMF. You know that the existing relationship with China is a bit frosty now, considering the rising concerns orchestrated by the intervention of the National Assembly. So the government is looking the way of IMF, and IMF has set certain conditions. First is that there is a need to review the cost on the fuel as well as that of electricity tariff. So Nigeria government is under compulsion because it's obvious the government at the moment, due to lack of creativity, due to lack of innovation, due to lack of that adequate preparation for the rainy day, cannot survive at the moment without debt, and is already looking for explore other options. And of course, IMF seem to be the most visible, and some of these conditions has been rolled out, and the government has no other option than to do something like this in a time that is, you know, very ill-timed, you understand, considering the fact that we are just recovering from, a lockdown because we're still in the COVID. Post-lockdown, lots of challenges, loss of job, according to the Nigeria Bureau of Statistics. 42% of Nigerians are already out of job. So considering all these challenges and you hike the cost of electricity, and most important, that of the fuel, which certainly like skyrockets the purchase of everything, the purchasing power of citizens is entirely time. But of course, the government have no option at this particular point.
But then again, there's even some advantage around these hikes, isn't it?
Yeah, the advantage would have been that if the hike actually translated to the removal of subsidy and complete deregulation. But as it stands now, even our own refineries are not working. And the flimsy excuse is that, due to vandals and all the rest. And I begin to wonder, what then is the job of the Nigeria Civil Defense? You understand? Why can't we protect our own vandals? And then with Dangote refinery coming up, that also translates to monopoly. You understand? That will not also bring like the robust competition that will drive down prices, like what we saw in the telecoms, you know, when Nitel went down, and then you begin to see like big players coming to like play down on the cost, you understand, you know, of telecom. But then for that to happen, it wouldn't just be a function of like a Dangote, who is a Lagos building refineries. You know, there has to be that complete deregulation. That also means that including price control, government should be able to ease off the hands. You understand? Give a level playing ground for attract foreign direct investment. And of course, internal investors can come in, build refineries, competitions can come into play. But what Nigerians should expect is that at the first instance, there will certainly be like more hikes, you understand, before certainly there will be a drop down. If you can recall, like when that also happened in the aspect of telecoms. I remember when things like a SIM card sold for 20-something thousand. But today is about 100 naira. That's the beauty of competition. You know, but when you just have like just one major key player controlling the price and all the rest. Things like that does not make for a healthy economic competition.
Now, how much of an advantage do you think this would have, especially for electricity tariffs? So many persons have given example of telecom, how we did telecom. Can it be done for electricity? The situation where the prices are high, because those who are playing now say that if the prices are low, it will be difficult for them to invest further and for power to be steady, because that's what Nigerians want. And there will be no competition. There will be no people who will be coming in to invest in that sector. So, do you see that play out in electricity?
Well, at the moment, I don't really see that playing out because the government is still very much in control. And the concern from stakeholders has been, can you explain to us why we could just move from about 2 point something naira, you understand, per kilowatt hour to 60 something naira? What's the explanation? You understand? Government, like, you know, cited instances of, okay, the cost of gas supply, you understand, you know, internal market forces and all the instances the government cited. But then what we should expect as proper accountability is that due to impact of this is like the reflection on the cost. Maybe it accounts for a 5 naira increase in the cost of electricity. But we have not even seen that much of accountability for the ones the citizens has been paying. You understand? As we speak now, you still have like over, you know, a great number of Nigerians that are unmetered. You understand? And then with the ideology even that the government came up, like when asked about the unmetered citizen, is that if we stay in a certain area, you understand, it is expected that probably on the average, when you calculate my cost, if I do not have meter, you will have like a kind of a reflection when you take the average of my neighbors. So what that means is that even if I've offed all the electrical appliances in my house, I will still be given an estimation that reflects the neighborhood that I stay in, which I don't think makes any sense. So we've not seen accountability. We've not seen political will. And first of all, accounting for the much the citizens pay before asking them to pay more.
Right. And elsewhere, unveiling the theme and logo for the commemorative activities to celebrate 60 years of Nigeria's independence, President Muhammadu Buhari only today described Nigeria, Africa's largest economy, as the most prosperous or prosperous black nation in the world. Buhari said this at the unveiling of the theme and logo for Nigeria at 60th anniversary, themed Together. Wow. Well, beyond the logo, I mean, there's so many talks about Nigeria so far, how far we've come. I mean, instead of asking this pedestrian question of how far we've come, I want to ask this. At what point did we lose track of the visions of our forefathers?
I think the time we left the truth, the path of truth, and started toiling with fallacy, praise singing. People who do not love the nation, we see them, you know, taking the hem of our affairs in all our leadership affairs, you know, both in all of the ties of government, ranging from the local government to the state government and to the federal. People that, when you look at their track record, there are clear indications that these ones are enemies, and I mean enemies of the nation. They have done like activities that, supposing every person in Nigeria should be like them. On an individual note, there will not be a Nigeria today. Unfortunately, these ones are the ones, you know that decides the pace. You understand? They decide the direction of leadership in our nation. And of course, you can tell, for anyone that is a good student of history, comparing Nigeria when we gained independence and now, if you are true to yourself, you can actually conclude that instead of progression, we've seen consistent retrogression. You understand? Even like as some sage like Wole Soyinka describe it, that Nigeria is actually forcefully heading to the drains. And if nothing is done, you know, to revert the tide of leadership, I mean, there may not be Nigeria in the next 5 years. It's a fact.
But it's the same Nigerians who enthrone these people, because if Nigerians don't accept that these people lead them, I mean, they wouldn't be there.
You know, I love the way my mentor described it. I'm talking about Professor Pat Otomi. He wrote a book, The Criminal Hijack of Leadership in Nigeria. You understand? These guys have hijacked power. They understand the way it works. They understand that the scourge of money politics has been the bane of Nigerian polity for quite some time. So what they basically do is, get all of the money, steal from all of the funding, set structures to ensure that they are well adequately funded. And then what they do is to use that same power, that same money, to ensure that they hold on to leadership. You understand? Hmm. And they can do everything they control. Like now, nobody is talking about electoral reform. But just the fact that we came out from a post-lockdown, we've seen like up to 10 draconian bills, you understand, ranging from the social media bills, you know, slamming 5 million naira on people that are freely expressing themselves. I mean, hate speech has been redefined in Nigeria. We've also seen the karma, no proper explanation. There are fears and the government doesn't really want to know. Thankfully also the National Disease Infestious Bill, which, like, there was much of plagiarism, getting the 1977 bill from Singapore. What Nigeria just did shamelessly, our National Assembly, was just to do, like, change a face. You know, any place you see Singapore, put Nigeria. You understand? Singapore's own was 43 pages, Nigeria's own 44 pages. And exactly word for word. And our lawmakers were shamelessly defending that. You understand? And of course, in the channel's town hall meeting, for 2 hours, of course, I was part of the conversation on that particular. I made my own input referencing the instance of what they did in Singapore, you know, collecting that the same way it was, you understand, right, word for word, which is very alarming. But then the guy that was leading that particular project, he stated something that was worrisome. He said, no going back on that bill. And I'm talking about Chukwuka Otazi. But thankfully, the Nigeria Governors Forum rose to the challenge. And that bill was stopped because it's quite very draconian. We've also seen the water resource bill and all manner of things just within this time. Now, what stops anybody from looking at multi-critical issues such as electoral reform bills? You know, just maybe just allow now in 2023, just even behind the corner, you see everybody talking about, can we have electoral reform bills and all the rest, which will be airtime by then.
Right. But then again, do you agree with the president as Nigeria being the largest economy and the most prosperous nation, prosperous black nation in the world?
Not at all, because of course when you look at the GDP, yes, in terms of GDP size, you understand, we are the biggest in Africa. And what would you expect, you understand, from a nation with more numbers? But of course, by the time you begin to look at GDP per capita, what that translates per an individual, you discover that we are poor. And of course, numbers do not lie. Of all nations in the world, 193 nations recognized, you understand, you know, by United Nations. Nigeria still prouds itself as the nation with the highest number, poverty counts, highest number of persons that are living with poverty, above some other nations like Pakistan, India, Indonesia, with also very high numbers, you understand? And when you look at it, like, in terms of global size of economy, if you look at the first 10 nations, you know, you begin to see like that disgrace of nations. But of course, the likes of India has distinguished herself amongst nations with high numbers that are not among the first 10 economies. You understand? Because when you look at it, it's a game of size. United States at number one is the third in terms of population. You understand? China is the first in terms of population. We also see an India moving from sixth position to fifth. But Nigeria has been big for nothing. You understand? Even like surpassing nations like India, whose population is almost 7 times that of ours. You understand? Mm. And not just that, when you also look at some of our indices, most terrorized nations, we are currently the third in the world. You also look at some other indices like out of school children. You know, these things are worrisome. These are things the government should begin to like give consigns, not like to come and do praises as though we live in another Nigeria. Unfortunately, of course, when some of these leaders talk, like what Garba Shehu said, you know, that with a hike in the price of fuel, it's obvious that, you know, there's already a decline in the cost of goods. It actually means that these guys are dwelling in another Nigeria. And it's actually high time for Nigerians to begin to speak out and let these people begin to feel what the masses are feeling. Because unfortunately, they surround themselves with sycophants who keep singing praises, even when there's nothing, you understand? His Excellency, this is a brilliant idea. His Excellency and the future of our children is actually moving to drains, you understand? Now, to tell you that these leaders do not actually have any great intention for the country, they know education is important, so virtually all their children are abroad, schooling. Those of them also that are politicians, let's start even from Enugu. How many commissioners have their children in government-owned schools? These are things we should begin to look at. How many local government chairmen stay in the local government areas where they rule You understand? So, I mean, people must begin to speak. And I think where I must say that Igbos have become, you know, very disappointing in terms of polity. Igbos were known to be Republicans. And by that, we talk to even kings without minding whose ox is God. But it's really very disappointing when you see people singing praises, you understand, when it doesn't. Like, for instance, if a governor now, you understand, like we saw in some instances, maybe he's doing some projects and it cracks. You still see people like coming to defend those projects. I mean, that is very visible to the blind, you understand, and audible to the blind, you know, to the deaf, that these things are not done in the best standards. You see people begin to sing praises. And these are things we must correct. Let me give an instance. You know, if you reach out to like engineers, you want to do a road, like meet civil engineers, you can determine the validity of the road. You can say, okay, I want this road to last for 4 years, 3 years, 2 years. Now, in the past of our administration in Enugu State, nobody has held, have even for once said, if this man was actually building with sustainability in mind, where are all the roads that he was celebrated for? You understand? Because you've seen some nations build like 10 years, 20 years, like, you know, Ebo is trying to do. We've also seen like nations like America having like 150 years projection. You understand? When you travel out, of course, I've had opportunity of traveling to a couple of nations. When you see some of these developed nations and you see the road, you're marching on it. You feel the sustainability that this road will survive generations. But we keep, you know, flowing an unending cycle. Someone will build road for the time. Another person will come again, build on the road and all the rest. Is this the way we are going to progress as a nation?
Right. All right. You mentioned Senator Chukwuka Otazi. He represents the people of Enugu North at the time, in the Senate. I think there was a protest earlier, I think some few days back.
Yeah.
Some women took placards around town in Nsukka. Actually, they were just protesting about the poor representation of the senator in the Nigerian Senate. I've also seen his aides saying things like it is for 2023. I actually sent him a text message asking that he reacts to what's going on in Nsukka, and he sent me a text and says that he's presently in Abuja. But I should just know that it's only trees laden with ripened fruit that are thrown stones at.
Well, I think that's a technical knockout. You understand? Let him address the real issues. Because honestly, apart from like Senator Choko Otazi, when you look at the kind of senators we have, you understand, in the Southeast at the moment, I would say to me from the Southeast, we only have one senator.
One.
I'm talking about Abaribe. You understand?
Really?
Yes. He is the one that has been able to stand for the cause of his people and his region. The others go there to warm the bench, you understand? And endorse. And guess what? The brilliance and intelligence God has given to the Igbo man, they end up using it, you understand? You know, when you see like some forms of draconian moves, Igbos are better the ones to like lead that kind of thing, like try to present strong arguments. And that's where you begin to see them. But when it comes to things affecting their people, affecting their region, even like things like consulting with the people which is statutory, we don't see any of them holding town hall meetings, engaging with stakeholders, trying to find out what are the real issues, what, you know, understanding their needs, and even coming to the house to like present. So if you call yourself a representative, and you don't even consult with the people you are representing, my dear, you are representing yourself and your family. And these are real issues Igbos must begin to look at. You understand? Let's call a spade and not a famine implement. If you are not doing well, you are not doing well. You understand? And when you look at them, ask themselves, how robust has been their representation, my dear? I will score like many of them 2/10. You understand? That's my personal views.
Right. The National Emergency Management Agency, NEMA, has sent a strong warning to 102 local government areas in 28 states. Director General of the National Emergency Management Agency, AVM Mohamedou A. Mohamed, disclosed this at the Flood Advocacy to Jigawa State's Governor Muhammad Badaru Abubakar in Dutse. He said the local governments are at a higher risk of being devastated by flood due to their closeness to waterways in the country. According to him, the annual flood outlook informed that 102 local government areas in 28 states fall within the highly probable risk area, while 275 local government areas in the 36 states of the Federation, including the Federal Capital Territory, fall within the moderately probable flood risk areas. The remaining 397 local government areas fall within the low probable flood areas. Muhammad noted that the predicted floods have started to occur in many parts of the country. This is almost a yearly occurrence. It doesn't look like it will go away anytime soon.
Yeah, it is. But then what is even more disturbing is the fact that these projections were not made now. They were made even right before the year began. So what would a prudent government have done to put all the necessary structures in place to avert that? But our fire brigade approach of doing things, we always wait. Are we not even talking about the rainfall almost? We almost been done with the rainfall and I missed the devastation. That's when we are having this conversation. And I mean, it's very terrible. But you know one very interesting thing? Some politicians in that area may also come and say there was no single devastation. You understand? Orchestrated by flood due to their timely intervention. These are the kind of, things we see from politicians. And you see people cheering. You understand?
Right.
But I mean, when Nigerians can begin to call a spade and not a famine implement, that's when we can begin to have it right as a nation.
All right. For this particular story, it's quite interesting, if you ask me. The federal government and the United States yesterday met on the visa ban on some categories of Nigerians. The meeting held at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs provided Nigeria the opportunity to brief the U.S. government on steps taken so far to resolve the issues. The Nigerian delegation is headed by the Permanent Secretary, MFA, Ambassador Mustafa Suleiman, while the American side is headed by the U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria, Mary Leonard. Also in attendance is the Comptroller General, Immigration, Mohammed Babangida, and senior officials from relevant ministries, departments, and agencies. The Permanent Secretary, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Ambassador Mustafa Suleiman, said Nigeria has accomplished almost 90% of the requirements by the U.S. government, which led to the ban on some categories of migrants visas imposed on the country in January. President Trump had on January 31 expanded the curbs on immigration visas to Nigeria and six other countries for failing to meet the U.S. security and information sharing standards. Briefing journalist Suleiman said federal government has put a lot of effort into meeting the requirement, which was why the U.S. government is re-evaluating the visa restrictions. Not just this, of course. We have an impending elections that is due. The United Kingdom, on the other hand, has warned of imposing sanctions, including visa ban and asset seizure on Nigerians who incite or execute violence in Edo and Ondo governorship elections. The British High Commissioner to Nigeria, Catriona Liang, said in a statement only yesterday that the UK greatly values the Nigerian democracy and thus will not condone any violent act that may undermine the democratic process in the coming elections. The warning came days after the United States government announced it is imposing visa restrictions on some Nigerians, undermining the electoral processes in the run-up to the governorship elections in Edo and Ondo State. Mr. Liang said the UK would deploy observers to the two states to monitor the elections. The British High Commissioner, who met leaders of the ruling All Progressives Congress and the main opposition PDP on Monday, reminded the politicians that apart from their assets being seized in the UK, they could experience a worst-case scenario of prosecution. Now, this is quite interesting, really. I mean, even though some persons have praised the idea that the method the U.S. is putting out, some persons still take it with a pinch of salt of some sort. What do you think?
I think it's an insult on our sovereignty, and why I think it's so. You know, it's just like someone, I tell you, I say, Charles, if you do this, you ain't going to come to my house again. You have your own house. You have your own roof. So what that suggests is you need me, but I don't need you. You understand? You can imagine a sovereign nation like Nigeria, the kind of threat, the kind of sanctions. Oh, you are not going to come to this place again. And then interestingly, the one that interests me the most, asset seizure. What does it tell you? It means these guys are investing there.
Right.
You understand? And that is where their interest is. So banning them can also translate to forfeiture of whatever thing they have. And I think that is the main thing.
Right.
Because honestly, with the things coming up in some rising nations, we've seen Arab Spring. We've also seen like places like Singapore coming up. You understand? Whatever thing you may think you want to enjoy in some of these nations in terms of infrastructure, you understand? Like the train services in Dubai is seen as almost the best. The advantages that some of those new cities have over places like New York, they have seen it all before building theirs. So I don't think the emphasis is more of just on healthcare, because you know at the moment in Singapore, the healthcare of the public sector, you understand, you can verify this. Singapore is the only country where the public healthcare is better than that of the private. You can imagine that.
Wow.
You understand? So in terms of like other nations competing with America shoulder for shoulder, America, of course, is not the one in terms of education.
Right.
You understand? So, but the thing is that these guys have invested a whole lot. You understand? Our commonwealth, they have invested. And now the threat is, if you do not do well, we're certainly going, it's going to lead to your forfeiture. And what that will also mean is that perhaps, I am suspecting that a great number of Nigerians, in one way or the other, you understand, who belong to the current leadership class, should have some interest, some things that keep me, you know, keep them going back to either UK and America. And that is why like something like this, you know, is a concern. And when US, they say things like this, you can trust them, they mean it.
Right.
Because the last time, like the last election, you understand, 2019 election, I was privileged to visit the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, you know, particularly the consular section, you understand, because of course in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, you have consular sections as well, just like you have for embassies, you know, that liaise with the main embassies for visa. And I was privileged to talk with the director, you understand, of the consular section in charge of Canada and America. And he disclosed to me that a minister, and I'm not going to tell the name, of a minister that went to U.S. Embassy, you understand, recently, and was turned down, even with a diplomatic note.
Wow.
You understand, a note verbal. And I mean it, you know. And that tells you something. And one thing also I love about those nations, you know, you talk about nations with sphere of influence. When they take some actions against certain people, it has a ripple effect.
Right.
Because someone may be wondering, okay, if you stop them from America, what of other nations?
Mm-hmm.
But oh, some other nations will begin to align, like you see in the case of, you know, America versus China now.
Right.
Before, you know, UK aligned, France aligned, Australia aligned, and all the rest. And then America is trying, you know, I mean, China is trying to find its footing based on existing bilateral relationship with some other countries he was not confronting frontally.
Right. But again, I want to ask if you think that it's the right way to go about it. Do you think it's a failure of our system or the failure of our government to do the right thing? Because if we have seen people persecuted over election malpractices in the past, I mean, countries will not come and start saying that they're going to ban our leaders, you know, because they didn't do it in an election.
It's entirely a failure of leadership. And there is one thing about Nigeria that is really quite disgusting. We saw in this nation when El-Rufai came out publicly on a national television and threatened European Union and some other alliances and platforms, you know, that were to come to monitor elections, you know, that they were returning body bags. And nothing up till now was done. You know, the level of impunity and the way with which people go about, even after saying certain things that are very weighty, doing certain things against humanity, not just against Nigeria, what other incentive for crime do we seek for? When you see criminals moving about freely. Like, you know, I was just talking to someone, you understand, you know, like recently, you know, on one of the stations, you know, that was yesterday on DSTV. And I made my input. I say it's very clear. If we just like go about the ceremony of like signing peace pact, and we've seen peace pact signed in the country and they're not respected, you understand? What we make the difference is when these guys are signing peace pact, remember that the major guys that cause the violence are not part of the peace pact.
Right.
Sometimes also they don't even have those peace pact interpreted to them. So what happens? When before, you know, the D-Day, which is going to be this Saturday, we've seen instances of violence. We've seen, like, you understand, you know, I mean, some things that are suggestive of violence. And have any person been remanded in custody since all of this started happening? And then what do you think will be a deterrent? You understand? You know, for those that are planning, you know, to do more ahead of Saturday elections. But if we've seen like one or two persons, three, we saw in Kogi election, all of the violence, as we speak now, nobody is in any jail. Nobody was taken to the court for anything. And we keep talking about electoral violence. And we think in a nation where we do not even respect agreement,
where people can tell you in Nigeria, you know, in Japan, which like is the most respected nation, Japanese can travel to 190 countries out of 193 without visas. Mm. The reason is if a Japan tell you, I will do this and he doesn't do it, he will tell himself, I deserve to die. Mm. They are known to commit suicide. I cannot keep the promise I made. But in Nigeria, people will tell you, I can't kill myself. You know that kind of thing. I made the promise. You can understand. And that is why up till now, the nations Nigeria can go to travel to without visa, only 45, including African countries. I have 54 African countries, but not many of them can allow. Now, when you talk about nations that are not Africa that can allow Nigerians to come without visas, you talk about Haiti, war torn zones, you understand? So, I mean, it really calls for a deep rethink on the part of Nigerian leadership.
When we return from this short break, we would focus on Edo State, basically. We have elections there. We'll just look at the itinerary of these two political parties, as the PDP and the APC, and the role of the citizens in enthroning fabulous leadership in that state. Be back after this. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Prime Time on Urban Radio 94.5 FM. We've been speaking with Chukwuma Okengwa, Executive Director, Lead Network, and is giving his two cents on the issues in the news. Now, our focus is on Edo State. In a couple of days, the Edo State citizens, or indigents, if you like, well, not indigent citizens or residents, would go to the poll to choose who becomes the next governor in the next 4 years. What you have seen so far, the campaigns are done by Thursday. Do you feel the people have the power to enthrone the kind of leadership that they want?
Honestly, the whole of the process has been like more or less like the political conscience, very desperate to ensure that they have their will done. And right from the very time like the process is started, we saw first from the polity a demonstration of the lack and loss of political ideology. Mm. These were two persons that in 2016, we saw an Obaseki, you understand, with APC, and then we saw Izeyamu with PDP, and then just within 4 years, there is a switch, rematch. So just imagine, like, it's more or less like what happens in a football match. Mm. And I want to first of all simplify what is the basic idea by ideology. Mm. I've had in different political fora, people trying to like explain what ideology is. Some people say it means manifesto. Ideology does not mean manifesto. It simply means who is this party meant for? That's the simplest way to define ideology. So like in America, when you talk about Republicans, you talk about the conservatives. You talk about maybe the Democrats, the liberals. These two sets of persons have good will for America, but the approach is different. And if I want to illustrate it in simple, basic terms, some people believe that in flogging a child, not sparing the rod, you can have the best child. Some others believe in word of advice. But the most important thing, if it works for you, then you can always canvass and advocate for your approach of doing things. That being said, you understand, I would say that also, irrespective of the order associated with that, like the switch within 4 years, also helped to like bring the, you know, more intrigues, things that people wouldn't have known, you understand? Because we now have like old enemies and now new friends, you understand? Right. You know, those that were tackling you, who exposed all of your records in 2016, right. You understand? We saw all of the expositions, you know, with Oshomole, you know, making lots of allegations against Anezeyamu, poured acid over on a student, expelled. And then you also saw, like, in the case of Obaseki, you understand, you know, the former party, you understand, or the current party now, you know, then alleging, you said you have, you made with 3 credits, you were able to assess A-level, you understand. Where then is the A-level certificate? And then, of course, was it really possible to gain direct entry with 3 credits without English and mathematics? So all of this now made for the intrigues. So while we saw an APC before now, you understand, that gave him that flag, coming up to say he is disqualified on the grounds that he doesn't have the certificate, you understand? And then you now see somebody like Isaiah, but trying to like make a clean slate of his record, coming from someone that was his major antagonist,
now becoming his major sponsor, saying that all he said before was just for the sake of politics. You understand? But then what even makes it more dreadful is that in the course of this, Oshomole lost his position as a National Party chairman.
Right.
So I'm saying that the only compensation he could have is that come Saturday, Obaseki must not return. You understand? But he's doing anything. We also saw the level of desperation show itself, like through the state House of Assembly. You understand?
Right.
They have made up their mind on one day to impeach Obaseki. And then the guy was able to gather intelligence. We saw, Obaseki, you know, his men removing
the roof.
I mean, the intrigues has been quite interesting, you understand? But of course, regrettably, fraught with violence and hate speech. And that also, like what we saw play out in the debate, you understand, was less, you know, of expectation of what ordinarily should be a context of idea. It was almost a continuation, because what was very distracting for me was the constitution of the audience. I know that in a typical debate, like I was there for the last presidential debate, and the constitution was very professional, because what is expected? You had five candidates that were debating, equal numbers from the different parties. If you want to constitute an audience of maybe like 200 people, you understand? Just about 75 slots can be for politicians and the ones that are there for context of ideas, not the OAS members.
Right.
I practically saw cheers and boos, which was against the rule of such kind of debate, you understand, which ought to be an intellectual exercise. And it was dominated between the two major contenders. I did not see equal representation of the other audience. And then over 60% of the audience should come from the academics, from people that are not in any of the political parties, civil societies. But what I saw there was like shows that there was really a problem. There were cheers and boos in the audience and all the rest. And I think Nigerians can do more better, you know, can do better next time by ensuring that when you are constituting an audience for a debate, it should be decentralized. It shouldn't be, you know, so that people can actually get to hear, you know, the things. Because what it was even very funny, including when people were messing up, people were clapping, you know, that kind of thing, or giving like robust counter, you know, that would destabilize their candidate. You begin to see, ooh, ooh, from the audience, and I begin to wonder, you understand, why this kind of thing?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for every election that comes, whether they are state elections or federal elections, you know, some people say it gives an opportunity to correct our wrongs. It gives opportunity to correct the past and the wrongs that have been made in the past. But you see, you know, the electoral system even getting worse by the day. For each election, we get worse rather than getting better. I wonder whether if you think our electoral reform should be looked at.
Yeah, very, very important. You understand? As a matter of fact, the world is moving away from the streets to the digital space. You know, the beauty of technology is that you can achieve more with less. It helps to like bridge lots of gaps, and especially when the system is opened up. Like we saw ANC coming up with a robust strategy in the last election, which they eventually denied, you know, that people should report electronically, you understand? And then stakeholders should also have access to all of the process. But we saw them denying, even with all of the supporters, you understand, evidence to show that these guys actually made this statement. We saw them deny, you understand? And up till now, nothing was said about that. That was taken to the court, and then the court technically knocked it off on the grounds that that has not been affected in the law. You understand? So I believe that if we want to get it right in this nation, we must begin to, like, first of all, tell ourselves the truth. I believe there was the truth before the law. Because Nigerian own laws have, even when it's against the politicians, you see them like people publicly, you understand, standing against the law. And that was why I was one of the happiest Nigerians when I saw like lawyers stand against the decision of the NBA to invite Erufai to talk to lawyers. I mean, he not get waiting, we not go see for Nigeria. One day we'll call Shakao to speak in a peace summit. With the way we really do things in this nation, it really calls for concern, you understand? But I believe it has really come to the point, because we've come to a point where power shifted from a major party, from the central level, that's PDP, to another coalition, which is the APC. So at this particular point, we have two major elephants, and of course,
that grasses suffer. We see the lots of lives being lost. And interestingly, these people do not have their children here. None of the violence get there near their dwelling. It's only like you see like lots of young persons who fought for them, who stood for them, and their lives are being taken. You understand? Funded, they are sponsored to cause mayhem, to ensure that the election do not go the right way. And interestingly, and regrettably, like what we saw in Kogi election, police was involved in snatching ballot box. But when things like this happen, the next thing, you see, first PR who will come to say, they are not our men. You understand? We saw what happened sometime in Ebonyi State, where armies were involved in snatching of and diverting of this bullion van. And then before you know, you saw the military, you know, forces coming to say they are not our men. These guys were on, you know, branded army vehicles and all the rest. So if we keep doing things this way, there is no way we can go. Why keep denying the truth? We've come to a point where we tell ourselves this nation is not working. We have the responsibility to tell ourselves the truth and fix it.
Right. We go straight to the phone calls right now. You can be part of the discussion this evening. 0093-999-945 and 0099-945-945. In 2016, elections, we had the major issue with vote buying. And there was practically nobody that was caught, you know, or even jailed or prosecuted. Do you see that happen again this time?
Yeah, very much more, because between then and now, nothing has changed. And, you know, between these two candidates, one already have the opportunity. He's been a governor for 4 years. Honestly, if he has done creditably well, his work would have been his manifesto. His work would have spoken for him. Unfortunately, when you look at the Human Development Index of Edo State, is still very regrettably poor. Most states in Nigeria are still way low behind 1%. Talking about in terms of health, in terms of education, access to capital and funding, Nigeria is almost like living like a nation without government. Yet in this nation, you see people praising government. How long are we going to continue this way? Honestly, when people travel out of Nigeria, I've witnessed that. And coming back, once you are landed at this airport, at our airport, you become angry. One kind of frustration. Because you keep telling yourself, these leaders travel to those places. What stops them from replicating the same here? Like, for instance, Enugu State, as an instance, like the old eastern capital, talking about both the south-south and southeast, and also being registered as one of the centenary cities in the world. Enugu State by now should not be less of a Dubai. We have the potentials to attract foreign direct investment as well as tourism. There's virtually no community in Enugu where you don't have tourism potentials. Unfortunately, we've not been able to leverage on that to open up, and especially with this international airport. When you are given an international airport, what that translates is direct access with the globe. Anybody can wake up one day and say, I want to visit Enugu, and you see the spiral effect. They lodge in your hotels, they buy your food, you understand? They club in your clubs, they spend money. And that, you know, has a way like of, you know, reviving the economy of the state. And I think the government need to begin to look at some of these issues, you understand? And let me advise, if any government must move far, find amongst your team critics, people that will be able to look at, you understand, like things critically the way it is, without looking at your face like and all the rest of it. Because the simple truth is that time is running out. Honestly, one of the things I see, if you ask an average politician who have been in the seat of power, they will tell you time really runs fast. Because you think you have 8 years, you think you have 3 years. Before you know, what you will now join is the bank one of people that will keep criticizing the incumbent governance, what they should have done that you didn't do.
True. So 0093-999-945 and 0099-945-945. Keep your short within... keep your thoughts within a minute so we can accommodate as many as possible. Hello, good evening.
Hello, good evening, Mr. Tao.
You're welcome.
Yo.
Yo.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Tukuma in the studio. Thank you very much. I really want to commend you for all you said. And Mr. Tao, we don't have... my name is... Sorry. My name is John Clint.
Okay. You're welcome back.
thank you. I have... we don't have... I don't know what I was of them. I really don't want to, because of this, they say social media, whatever, whatever. I really don't want to say much, because I just thank you very much.
All right, thank you so much. 0093-999-945.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Ferdinand. I call from Africa.
Ferdinand, go ahead.
Good evening, guest on the studio. Please, I have a question to you, guest on the studio. I want to know, when will the Dangote refinery start functioning? Please, tell me the exact year. Thank you.
From the news, 2021, that should be next year. 2021.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, I'm wondering what he needs that information for. Is he going to relocate to Lagos or something? Anyways, let's see. Hello?
Yeah, good evening, sir.
Good evening to you.
Thank you. Good evening to your guest here.
Yeah, good evening.
I'm Comrade Maxwell, I'm calling from Manila.
You're welcome.
Now, I must appreciate your guest. You just said it, but for me, I have been thinking of our electoral process. I was placed out in Kogi State. Let's not forget my play itself out in this upcoming Edo State gubernatorial election. So, most at times we have advocated for separate court for this electoral offender. But the key actors there, they don't think it's necessary for them to have such court, because they want to continue getting it anyhow they want it. But if at all those people in the corridors of power, if they think they are there for the people of this country and they love this Nigeria, I think it's right time for them to begin to do the needful. You can't keep so many because you want to become governor or you want to become whichever position you are trying to occupy. And end of it, nothing happens. And if you go to the court will just ask you, nothing happens. Like what we have just witnessed in the verdict of Kogi State election. So it's appalling. That's why people in this country can do whatever thing they like, because they want to occupy the seat of power. Such a thing, it shouldn't continue, because the international community, I think they are looking at this country. If at all we think they are watching us, I think we should change the narrative and stop doing what we are doing currently. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, good evening.
Your name and location.
My name is Mr. Ben. I'm calling from Enugu.
Ben, go on.
Yeah, my brother, we are. I must have to be sincere to you. We are tired of this country. We are tired of these state governors. The president is not performing. The governors are not performing. We are really tired. We, the masses, we are fed up.
All right. Thanks for your thoughts. Hello. Okay. So, just to wrap up, really, the sanctions that are being proposed by the United States on electoral offenders in Nigeria, do you think it will by any way send the message to reset the mindsets and the character and the behaviors of our ruling class, the elites?
Well, to some extent, but then all that really matters to these guys is let's clinch the seat of power first. We can always replace what we lost, maybe by losing America. Because I'm sure that America is able to hold them because of their interest,
right,
their investment. And the UK was not missing words when UK spoke about seizure, not just for future, but seizure of assets.
Right.
So I'm sure that is their interest. But the guys know that once they clinch this power once again, you understand, they can recover in 4 years. Or they lose by the virtue of some of the interventions.
So there's really nothing that particular
that doesn't really trouble them. You understand? Because they know they will gain the money. You know, I was speaking with a politician recently, and he made one statement. You understand? He said, "Do you know that if, like, maybe a state government decide not to pay for 3 months, do you know who really have that capacity? You understand? Maybe before elections, you decide to forfeit payment of salaries for 3 months." Who anywhere in the state from anywhere have the capacity to really fight you? in terms of funding. Because at the moment, everything about structure, forget all of the grammar. There's nothing like less party and super party in Nigeria. No party have ideology. It's all about which party have the money, the cash. It is cash that speaks, you understand? And that is, to them, is all about money politics. So you have godfathers investing, negotiating stakes, and then expecting return on investment. That's exactly what happens. But if, and I will advocate, if people really want governance to be a social contract between the masses and the people, we should be able to look out for credible people who have the capacity, who have in one way or the other demonstrated honesty, demonstrated common sense, demonstrated sense of direction. These are the people who should be able to entrust our lives and that of our children in their hands.
Right. Thank you so much, Mr. Chukwuma Okengwa, Executive Director, Lead Network. We truly appreciate you for your analysis. It's been fabulous this evening.
Thank you so much.
All right, to all our listeners, many thanks for being part of it, and thanks for also calling in and being part of the program. This particular edition is on our Facebook page. We're live right now. You can drop your comments in that comment section. It's facebook.com/UrbanRadioEnugu. My name is Charles. The news is next. Have a good evening.